Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Heart of Texas, the trailer park is not nice and dark. Deep in the heart of Texas, Dad drinks his brew and he spits his chew. Deep in the heart of Texas, the TV blares but no one cares. Deep in the heart of Texas, here we go.
Hey everybody, welcome to
Bois.
It is Friday. I'm over here looking at the camera. There is not one.
There is not a camera.
We are recording this on April Fool's Day, so
yes,
you might have gotten a little scare before, but nothing to fear. We're going to keep on plowing through this sucker. This week, we're going to talk about an article that came out on Giant Freaking Robot about 4 days ago, published by Robert Scucci. I think that's how you say his name. S-C-U-C-C-I.
Yeah. Scooch? Like Stanley Tucci, but Scoochie. It's Scucci. Yeah, Scucci Scucci.
It says, Hank Hill is the conservative hero we need.
And I really like this article. I found this one before you shared it with me. I have a RSS feed that gives me any mention of King of the Hill.
Oh, that's cool.
Any mention of King of the Hill on most platforms.
You need to share that RSS
Google.
With me.
Yeah. And... So I read this before you showed it to me. So what I like about it is that it really shows what Hank really is. I feel like a lot of conversations about is Hank this or is Hank that or what is Hank or Hank would have voted this way or Hank would have done this. I really like the conservative nature of Hank.
Yeah.
I really do like that. But I also... we're about to go through of all the great things that make Hank Hank, especially the first one where he's always able to see everything from all sides, kind of.
He really is.
And he looks at everything from a different perspective. And then if it's valid to change his mind, he changes his mind. He doesn't just ride with something because it will sell him a Bible or some gold shoes kind of thing.
So let's talk about that real quick. The article opens up, Hank Hill is the conservative hero we need. It says, as time marches forward and we approach yet another extremely polarizing election cycle, dear God, yeah, it will be. Americans are more divided than ever. Yes, they are. And rightfully so. While it's a healthy practice to discuss partisan politics, political discourse more often than not results in opposing parties slapping each other silly from across the aisle. No matter what party you find yourself supporting, I urge you to sit through a few episodes of Mike Judge's King of the Hill, because Hank Hill is the level-headed conservative father figure that we could all learn a thing or two from. So Hank is the ultimate purple to me. He's blue on the red on the outside and purple. Well, he's kind of purple on the outside and a little red,
purple,
little blue. Yeah
just
all the way through,
purple.
Maybe. Yeah.
And we're doing this episode for all of the people who comment on how liberal our show is. We want to show that we are purple. We don't really care either. Or we come from Texas, so there is a bit of conservatism in the Texan ideology.
We can't
in
help
a Texan's
it.
Ideology, yeah. Period, just as a Texan. There is
I think
some
it's changing
ideals.
A little bit because there's a lot of Gen Y, Gen X, Gen Z people here.
Well, I think it's fiscal conservatism is what
it is
what we like.
And fiscal conservatism is great. Daily conservatism has its problems. So does daily liberalism. I mean, it just, come on, people. You can't say you're one or the other. You got to be down the middle. I mean, it's just no side.
Both sides,
no
yeah.
side has everything you want. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't really like bipartisanship. I mean, it's one of the things that the founding fathers preached
against. Yeah, it's not the way it's supposed to be.
They preached against bipartisanship, even though they were probably bipartisan too while they were preaching about it. They did not want us to become what we became.
No.
And that's okay. It happens. And it's an evolving document, as they say.
Like you mentioned, the people who accuse us of being liberal or whatever, I want everybody to hear this, okay? Stop what you're doing. Pull over to the side of the road. Put your burger down. Take the gun out of the dog's mouth. And listen. I am not red. I am not blue. I go right down the middle. If it helps my family, I go that way. If it helps my friends, I go that way. It's what makes sense. And common sense is what we have missing from day-to-day politics. In this country, common sense is dead, and common sense is not a bad thing. Common sense means you trust your gut, you do what's right, and you move on. And you don't infringe on the rights of others. That's it. Yeah. That's it.
Well, it was one of the things that I was taught growing up was there's a Hank Williams song, and my dad always told me, it doesn't matter where you're at, where you are, just remember this song and you'll be all right.
Yeah.
And he said, mind your own business and I'll be minding mine.
Mm-hmm.
He said, me and my wife are fighting, that's all right. You know, he said, if people are arguing, whatever's going on in life, if you put those blinders on and you just go on and mind your business, there's really little that can go wrong.
People on the outside probably see me and my wife kind of go at it sometimes. And I got to tell you, there is nothing stronger than the bond between me and my wife. And so if you're seeing it the other way, then that's your problem, not ours, you know. And if we would keep that in mind a little more often, but again, we live in a society where we got to watch everything everybody does and make fun of it.
That's the problem. We live in a society.
Yeah.
You got to get out of that society.
All right. Hank Hill is a conservative willing to have changed his mind. It says Hank Hill is a hardworking middle-class man who only cares about three things, his family, propane, and propane accessories, probably in that order. Fiscal responsibility and drinking beer with his friends. Okay, four things. Despite the fact that Hank is a card-carrying Republican and practicing Methodist with a strongly established sense of self, he is not an immovable object, nor should any of us be. A notion that becomes increasingly apparent as the series progresses, aiming to satirize traditional red state family values. King of the Hill does an excellent job pointing out the absurdity of being set in your ways. And through Hank Hill, Hank Hill shows us that somewhere between red and blue ideologies, there's a beautiful shade of gray that needs to be considered. That's exactly what we just said.
Absolutely.
Second point here is Hank is a great dad, and he is. More importantly, I need to talk about Hank Hill's relationship with his son, Bobby. In Hank's ideal world, Bobby would have a flat top haircut, play football, and do manly things like grill, hunt, work on cars, and date cheerleaders.
Yep.
Bobby is the exact opposite as he embraces stand-up comedy, doesn't want to shoot deer, and seemingly has no interest in dating girls in the early episodes. Despite their diametrically opposed personalities, Hank loves Bobby unconditionally and does everything he can to make sure Bobby feels supported no matter what path in life he decides to take, even if he doesn't necessarily approve of some of his more questionable behavior.
Yeah.
And that is unconditional love. And that's what you should have for your children.
Yeah, you should.
If your child... Let's say your child goes out and eats somebody, right? I'm still going to love my child. I'm not going to like them. I'm not going to support it, but I'm still going to love my child because they're my child.
Yeah, it's like how people, I'm trying to think of a serial killer or something.
Dahmer.
Wasn't it Dahmer whose parents were still alive and his mom used to go visit him or something like that? You know, it's still like you still brought this. It might be an evil creature, whatever you want to call it.
You didn't know that.
But you didn't know that. You held it when it was a baby. You fed it, tried to do your best. And you did your perceivable best.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Dahmer had a crazy upbringing. Because some of those guys don't have bad upbringings or nothing like that. What was the guy who killed his grandparents and then went and hid out in the woods somewhere?
Oh, I don't know.
And he reads... he does audiobooks.
Oh, really?
For the deaf. He's read more audiobooks for the deaf community than anybody in prison. I'm trying to think of who it is.
Wasn't the bomber, was it?
Read books. Kaczynski? prison, the serial killer. I can't remember his name.
Well, as
I
we're
say Ed Gein, but I don't think
Ed,
that's right.
As we're talking about this, the next point is Hank has learned from his own childhood. So that's pretty close to what we're talking about.
Ed Kemper.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's done all kinds of audio, but he's done over 5,000 of recording.
So Hank has learned from his own childhood. Hank Hill's relationship with his own father, Cotton, drives this point home because their relationship is questionable, to say the least. If anybody's got a right to gripe about their childhood, it's Hank.
Yeah.
Recognizing that he sustained a considerable amount of emotional abuse as a child, Hank's level-headed yet sometimes misguided approach to parenting is commendable because he knows firsthand what it's like to not win his father's approval. And there's never a doubt that Cotton does not approve of what Hank is. In other words, the notion of traditional masculinity that Cotton so proudly embraces stops with Hank because Bobby's happiness is far more important to him than embracing tradition. Did you feel that way, like, from your parents? Like, they wanted you to be one thing, but you turned out to something else?
No. Yeah. I never got that from my parents.
I never got it from my parents either. I think we were both very lucky in that.
They honestly... And they still really don't. I could do whatever, you know, I could be working at McDonald's right now and they wouldn't give a shit.
As long as you're happy.
That's the one thing my parents always taught me was it doesn't matter what you have, material, happiness is not, you can be happy while riding in a Porsche.
Yep.
But if that, you know, if you were to lose that, and
happiness does not equal money.
It doesn't equal any of that. You know, all those material things at the end of the day are just things, and that, like, you know, love and all those things are way more important.
A couple more points here. Hank is a great friend. As a friend, Hank Hill deals with his idiotic neighbors on a daily basis, but always functions as the voice of reason. There you go. They so desperately need to hear when they get involved in their harebrained schemes. Between Dale's wild and Antarctic. How do you say that? Anarchist. He's an anarchist. Yeah. Anarchist conspiracy theory. Again, it's very early in the morning. Boomhauer's relentless womanizing and Bill's never-ending battle with depression. Hank's solid footing in adult life makes him the consistent and reliable friend that he needs to be. And paints Hank to a T. Consistent
does.
And reliable. Though Hank's behavior and his day-to-day interactions aren't necessarily reflective of his political stance, his willingness to meet everybody in the middle before giving them a stern lecture is most certainly rooted in what he believes to be a more conservative approach to handling his affairs. He is a great friend.
He is.
And his friends are idiots.
They are.
And he puts up with it, and he even gets them out of their trouble. So it's I don't know how much more you can do for your friends. When Hank's political, he isn't ugly about it. Always active at town hall meetings, Hank Hill brazenly stands up for his community and takes one for the team when he has to. In flush with power, that's the one about the local
toilets.
He's
very civic. He does his very. He's very civic about doing his civic duties.
When the town of Arlen forces its residents to switch over to low-flow toilets, Hank doesn't bicker or name call, but instead comes up with a sound argument to present to the community as reasonably as he could. By reaching across the aisle and laying out his case, Hank Hill proves that the low-flow toilets are ineffectual and saves the day. And then the last one, Hank Hill is just a great guy. As Hank Hill's character evolves throughout King of the Hill's run, it's clear that he's an open-minded individual who's always willing to do the right thing, even if doing the right thing goes against his core beliefs. Though this willingness to entertain other perspectives and learn from everybody else in his community, Hank Hill is the conservative hero we all need to look up to. At the end of the day, all you need to do is stay on Hank Hill's good side and denounce charcoal and butane. And if you passionately disagree with him, he'll try his best to educate you. And that is something I've said a lot, that arguments are not always bad.
They're not. I feel like
it's differing opinions.
The only time that an argument is bad is when people start getting malicious towards each other, which you see a lot of. And I feel like a lot of people, whenever you're having discussions, the maliciousness comes from the fact that they'll never sway your mind.
Oh, sure.
Instead of just having a discussion with somebody and being able to see both perspectives or just agree to disagree, people get malicious and angry or, you know, put reviews on podcasts. Should know what your politics are. Well, we're human beings that are doing a podcast who have thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And sometimes they're not going to always align with what everybody does. And I'm not sure why podcasts feel left leaning, that you, that's the algorithm that you found yourself in, I feel like, because
yes,
I see a lot of perspectives on my social media, on all my algorithmic YouTubes and stuff like that. I get a lot of variety. You know, I'll have Tim Dillon and I'm trying to think of, you know, I'll have like Tim Dillon and Jimmy Kimmel in my my feed, you know, and they're two people from two very, very
opposed,
far sides of the perspective of life. So I like to see everybody's perspective. I like to see what everybody thinks and feels. That's how I make my judgments on stuff, is I look at everything from all sides and all perspectives, and then I make a judgment on what I'm going to do. I can't vote in the United States anyway, so nothing I say politically matters, or what I feel doesn't matter anyway.
You know,
I'm taxed without representation.
Yeah, we all are.
It's the reverse Boston Tea Party.
I think that
I'm drinking it, not most dipping of, it in. I'm not throwing it away.
I think that most of the problems we're experiencing right now come from social media. I think social media is bad for us. Yes, not only an echo chamber.
That's what I think is bad, the echo chamber.
There was a, you know, South by Southwest just concluded here.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, you should watch the keynote. There's a gentleman. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out what his name is. He is the guy who started Patreon. Okay.
Okay.
And for some reason, I'm blanking out on his name right now. But he did the keynote for South By this year, and he's talking about Patreon becoming a social platform.
Okay.
And he says that basically he's never going to use the algorithms. And the reason for that is when you look at Twitter, you look at Facebook, things like that. Back in the early days, they could make lots of money off of Facebook by announcing their music and going on tour and doing contests and all this stuff. And
yeah.
The people that liked them always saw their content. Well, now there's been a change in social media. Now the algorithm pushes what's popular. You're going to get way more of what's popular than what you like. And so they're forming your opinion for you.
Pretty much.
And what he's saying is fans are getting squeezed out of like smaller groups. You know, there's the old thing where you don't want 100,000 fans, you want 1,000 loyal fans, right?
Yeah.
And that's been pushed out of these social media platforms.
A lot of it has. It's not. It's all based on the algorithmic stuff. And if you're not doing what the algorithm likes, then it doesn't push your content.
And so I am very, I'm psyched about him turning Patreon into more of a social platform, because he's got a free side now as opposed and the paid side. And then he's going to have sort of a feed in there, just like a Facebook or whatever. Yeah. But it's not going to be controlled by algorithms, which I think is fantastic.
Which is good, because algorithms end up getting, you get weird shit like there's this one of this 19-year-old girl doing a TikTok dance announcing that her grandmother had passed, and that's why you get people doing weird dances and stuff to like announcements of their grandmother passing away, because they whatever the, because there is a scan that scans the video. It scans it for the audio that you use. It scans it for the text you put on it, and it scans it for what's going on in the video. And if it's fits whatever the algorithm's, you know, equation is, it boosts it. So if you have the right text on there, the right this or the right emoji or the right hashtag or whatever it is, it throws you into the algorithm, which is kind of shitty for people who are making good content, because the good content might not get boosted into the algorithm because it's not what people are viewing.
Well, think about how many times you've been told you need this kind of thumbnail, you need this to stand out, you need that to stand out,
you need
keywords,
it's required.
You need hashtags, you need all this crap. And none of it has to do with you socially interacting with people you like and know.
Nope.
And that's what these social apps should be. It should be you interacting with people in your community and liking each other and supporting each other and things like that. Instead, it's let's all fight with each other, and then I'm going to recommend this video to you that says the moon never existed.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's gone too far
So you're trying to tell me the moon is real?
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you the moon is real and the planet is round.
I don't believe it.
I'm sure we just lost half of our listenership, but anyway.
Nah, it's flat.
All right, guys. Earth's flat. That is it for our Friday. That ain't right. You want to tell them where they can find us?
Yeah, you can find us at BWAAAKOTH.com, or you can find us at RogueMediaNetwork.com/BWAAAKOTH, or you could shoot us an email at BWAAAKOTH@gmail.com.
Also, if you don't mind, go check out the Patreon. There's $3 a month support there. We would really appreciate it if you could help. Also, remember our Monday episodes are on Spotify as video now. So we're on video, Spotify and YouTube.
Yep.
Those are the Monday only episodes. On Fridays, you'll always get audio. Also, check out Swimmer's Ear, our Adult Swim Swam podcast. We want to thank you all for being here.
Yeah, we appreciate y'all again for listening in.
Oh, no, my dog died. Nope, April Fool's.
Ooh,
all right, we'll see you. Bye. Wayne and Tanya.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.